ESPN's NBA insider Brian Windhorst. Brian, as we look back on game one of the Raptors series, obviously it didn't go their way, but from your perspective as a reporter, as an insider, what was the bigger story? Kyle Lowry being pointless or Kawhi Leonard only playing 33 minutes?
Both. I think, you know, I don't think, you know, it was Nick's first playoff game, and he may not have had the cleanest operation that he wanted, although I think part of him taking the blame for not getting Lowry more involved was kind of trying to take some of the attention off of him. It won't work, but he was trying. At the end of the day, if Gasol hits the shot in the corner, which is a 50-50 shot for him probably, and Augustine misses that shot at the top of the key, which is maybe 40-60 considering everything, it's a completely different conversation. So because of the Raptors' history, they bring that to the table. Unfortunately, that's the reality. But I don't look at the Raptors as like a five-alarm fire right now. I think they'll play better, and I think they'll even the series, and then it'll get interesting to see how they play on the road.
We were talking about this earlier. A player of Kawhi's ilk, does he not go up to the coach and just say, I'm not sure what's going on, but why aren't you playing me more? I was kind of not at that level in my profession, which was hockey, but I would say to the coach, what the hell are you doing? Why am I sitting here?
Well, I don't think it's Kawhi's MO to do that in any situation on the bench. That's not who he is. You know, just the rotations got off a little bit, and they were behind. And I think that there was some pressure over there. And I just think it's one of those things that's a mistake, and they'll move on from it. And it's not going to define the playoffs. To me, I was just so impressed with the way he was delivering down the stretch. I was just very excited. Like, this is what they got him for. You know, the problem is, again, you guys and all the Raptors fans have this scar tissue of these previous disappointments. I typically don't overreact to game one, and it very rarely defines a series, but I realize that telling you that is a hard sell after game one certainly defined the series with the Cavs last year. So I get why there's concern, but, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, my worry level for the Raptors is pretty low, like maybe 2-3 right now.
Yeah, no, I'm in the same boat. They're 2-14 lifetime as a franchise in game one.
Crazy.
And it's insane, and they've gone on to win a lot of series, especially in recent years, at least when they're avoiding playing LeBron. And last time I checked, LeBron's not playing tonight.
That's correct.
But you talk about a couple of shots going in or missing, for that matter, and the narrative changes or the conversation changes. I think, you know, it gets back to that first question I posed to you, because the past couple of days, and I guess this has been an ongoing theme to an extent all year, because of load management with Kawhi, because Kyle's had some injury problems, this idea that maybe Lowry and Kawhi cannot coexist. You know, they can't find a rhythm together when they're on the court. Well, they have to. And the fact that we're still wondering that, what does that say about the whole season for the Raptors?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a fair question. I feel like Kyle had a really good season. Other than the injuries, I felt like he existed relatively well with him. And I actually considered him for my third team All-NBA. I mean, he didn't make it, but he was on the list. I felt like he did a lot of good things this year. I was, you know, there was a lot of nights where I watched the Raptors and were like, man, are these guys good? And one of the things I really like about them is that they're more diverse in the way they can play, so that when you get into pressure situations in the playoffs, you have Danny Green, you have Marcus Gasol, you have Siakam, who is a completely different player than he was before. And that's the way I feel. That's an opinion that I developed over watching them for 5 or 6 months, and it didn't work in game one, but I don't think that that's a complete referendum. I still am going to believe that Kyle and Kawhi can play well together, because they were awesome together when they played together most of the season. It's maybe not the most perfect fit of all time, but I honestly believe they both want it to work.
With Brian Windhorst from the NBA on ESPN, it's Raptors Magic Game 2 tonight right here on TSN Radio. You can watch it on TSN, tip-off at 8. Last night, history was made at the Oracle, and a lot of history has been made out in Golden State over the past 4 years. Usually it's positive history for the home team.
Right.
It wasn't. The Clippers, they came back. They were down 31 points.
I know.
Is this a wake-up call for Golden State? Or, I mean, are they just going to scoff at it and say, who cares, we're still going to win this, no problem?
Yeah, I think the real difficulty with Golden State is it's hard to beat them 4 out of 7 times. To win this game, it took a historic comeback. That's one. Okay, what else do they have in the bag, you know? I will say this. My biggest concern about the Warriors this year is their togetherness. They just don't have the same togetherness they've had as a team for the last few years. It's one of the reasons why they brought Andrew Bogut back in, because his personality is really effusive and he brings people together. And it was something that their front office was worried about. And so, to me, that's, you know, the only question is, will there be any animosity that develops? You know, will they be too emotional? I think beating these guys 4 out of 7 is incredibly difficult. It takes special circumstances for it to happen. We saw it happen one time in the last, 4 years. This is 5 years. And it took a historic comeback with suspensions and injuries and all kinds of stuff like that. So the difficulty with playing the Clippers is they don't have an off switch because they don't have the luxury of not playing at full speed all the time. So when you play them, you always have to finish. I don't care if you're up 40. They're not going to change their speed. It's the way that they have to play to keep their head above water. And I think the Warriors just got caught in that last night. It was an incredibly enjoyable game to watch. And frankly, I hope it happens again. I'd love to see the Warriors get pushed to 6 games in this first round.
How frustrating is it for you and your colleagues? I believe Kevin Durant refused to talk to the media last night. I mean, isn't he one of the guys they want to hear from?
Yes. what I would say is this. One, there's a $24 billion, all figures U.S., contract, and part of doing your job for the money that you get is to talk to the media. Not because you have to do anything for us individually, but because it's part of the business. Mm-hmm. And earlier this year, Kevin went, I think, 11 days without talking to the media, and really nobody did anything about it. When I was covering the Miami Heat, the Pat Riley rule was you talk to the media every day, and LeBron James talked to the media every day, and Dwayne Wade talked to the media every day because that is what your expectation is as part of your role in the league. Now, I would never say anything bad about the Warriors organization. I think that they have a class organization, one of the best run teams I've ever seen, but they let them get away with that for the last 11 days, and I think that's emblematic of the way they generally have operated with Durant, which is they kind of just let him freelance and he's slowly sort of gone on his own path. And, you know, one of the things that you see spending any time around the Warriors or anything what you hear about the Warriors is just how a little bit disassociated he is with their operation right now. And that's one of the reasons why they're seriously worried about whether he wants to come back after this season. And like at the end of the day, if he doesn't want to talk to the media, whatever, it's not going to break anyone's heart, but it is emblematic of the way he's sort of gone off on his own path this year. And the Warriors have not been able to rein that in.
With Brian Windhorst, sticking with that theme, you know, business and what's in the best decision for the league, for the teams, for the players. We were talking about Zion Williamson earlier and him declaring for the draft, which was a foregone conclusion. But in my opinion, it's in the best interest for the league that the New York Knicks win this lottery. You know, they're a joke of a franchise right now, but they're a very historic franchise in the biggest city, biggest media market in the world. How would you feel about that in terms of what the league's, you know, best interest would be in terms of the lottery balls falling for Zion Williams? Zion Williamson.
All right, so I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Akron, Ohio. I grew up in an environment where it was a middle market baseball team, which lost a lot of stars over the years. So my background is to support middle markets, okay? That said, as an employee of ESPN, I will tell you that the NBA will never be its healthiest if the Lakers and Knicks are not healthy. It also helps for the Bulls and Celtics to be healthy. The Bulls are not healthy right now. So from that standpoint, from a straight business standpoint, it would be the best for the NBA as an overall health for New York, Chicago, or the Lakers to win the lottery and get Zion Williamson. Just as it was best for the health of the PGA Tour that Tiger Woods won the Masters. It may have been a cool story had Xander Schauffele won it, but the best thing for the league was Tiger winning. The best thing for the NBA would be the New York Knicks or Lakers winning. That said, the Knicks have been in the lottery for decades, and they haven't won since 1984. And this year, they have a better, much higher percentage chance of getting the fifth pick than they do of any of the top four picks. And the lottery odds were flattened out for this exact reason, to try to avoid this tanking situation. And the Knicks, as the worst record in the league, have the worst chance of any team that's ever had the worst record in the lottery, to get him. So the reality that that's going to happen is still pretty low, and so they better have other plan B, C, D, and don't expect to get bailed out by luck.
I don't want to put you in a bad spot, but so you're not of the belief that, I think it was the Ewing draft, that the envelopes were
frozen.
One was colder, and one of the corners was bent, so you don't see that happening for the Knicks this time around?
Well, you know, obviously a lot of people have theories, but no matter what happened at that time, where I think I was in first grade, the lottery now is viewed by everybody and handled by like an accounting firm and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. even if they wanted to, and put it this way, if you know, they've had many opportunities. They had the Durant lottery, they had the LeBron lottery, they had the Anthony Davis lottery. There's a lot of opportunities for chicanery, and it never actually happened.
Well, we know that they made sure to doctor the Andrea Bargnani lottery sweepstakes.
That's right.
Because the Raptors, had to have them. The Raps had to pick first overall for the first time in franchise history.
Wow. Who did they pass up on in that?
Well, it was Aldridge who went two. Rudy Gay was in that draft as well. It wasn't a great draft, but that's the one they win. It's Andrea Bargnani.
Yeah.
Anyway, enjoy the rest of the playoffs. Thank you for doing this, Brian.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
There's Brian Windhorst from ESPN.